Hey everyone, this is Stacey Lindis from Podcast PD, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Make sure you check out all of the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Brian Buffington and Bucky Bush are two technology gurus, and we're talking tech in the classroom. Awesome ideas, lots of fun. Enjoy. Teaching Learning Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Brian Buffington is an EdTech pioneer, always looking for better ways to increase student engagement and learning. He inspires thousands of teachers, admins, and students in regards to instructional technology strategies, professional video production, and cyber safety education. Brian has presented at national, state, and regional conferences, highlighting EdTech and classroom innovation. His most recent endeavors include Camp Google, a full-day camp dedicated to student-centered projects using Google Apps, and launching a virtual reality lab at a nearby elementary school. When Brian is not playing with tech, he's playing house concerts and singing hashtag happy music for the masses. Along with his wife, he owns a creative arts company, Studio Blue. Bucky Bush has a passion for technology, tools, and services that help make people's lives easier and more enjoyable. In his work world, Bucky provides technical support services and training to school staff in addition to data analytics service for school and district-level administrators. He is starting his 10th year at Northwest RESA, where he is the technology director. By the way, he also shares the first and last name of two former presidents of the United States. Please welcome Brian Buffington and Bucky Bush to the show. Say hi to everyone, Brian and Bucky.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Internet.
Awesome to have you guys, and I appreciate you being here. And you know, I've gotten the chance to know both of you and your awesome drive and magical work with technology over the last couple of years. And recently, I attended a conference, and the two of you presented. You had this awesome presentation called Buff and Bucky's Tech Survival Kit. You know, so we're going to talk about tech tips today. Before we go there, let's talk inspiration for working with tech. Is there something that you did, read, experienced, or saw when you were a kid that made you have an interest in technology?
Go, Bucky.
Yeah, it goes way back. My dad owned a computer shop when I was little. People think that I just kind of sat on the counter and watched him build computers. Wasn't really the case, but always had an interest in it because of that. And growing up, I was really into video games, as most of the kids are these days. But back then, you couldn't just pick up a controller and play with somebody online across the world. So when I was 13, I actually figured out how to configure my router to set up a VPN so I could play Halo online with other people. So that kind of got me started. And
how old were you?
13.
Nice.
Yeah. And so I think that's an important theme, is you've got to have that your learning followed by your passion. I think passion drives learning in most cases.
Yeah.
Very cool. At 13, and I'm thinking when I was 13, because there's a little difference in ages here, guys. So I think my technology was a TI-33 transistor radio.
I thought that was a calculator.
It was. I think I got the right number, you know. and actually mine, I ran over it on my bike. I dropped it when I was on school one day, and when I went to pick it up, I actually ran over it, and so you had to push the back end to make it work, but it worked. Just kept on ticking. I'm trying to think, you know, I had my 8-track tape player, I had my record collection, which are now back in style, which is awesome. So, all right, I digress. So Brian, how about you?
Well, I have a couple maybe things that kind of made me want to get into technology. One was I saw the movie Weird Science.
Nice.
I wasn't really good with ladies at the time, so I thought that if I had a special computer, I could make a girlfriend. but that never happened. But I did find a wonderful wife, though, so that's even better. That's even better. Then the other thing is my uncle, never forgot, he got a computer. And I'm a little older than Bucky, just a little, right, Bucky? And then he got a computer and he got hooked up to the internet. Like there's this new big thing called the internet. And of course the first place I went to was farts.com. I don't know if we can say that on podcast.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I was young. But people would upload their flatulence.
Nice.
You could preview and listen to what they were doing. And it was put on by some fictional character called Dr. Rex Briefs.
Great.
Wait a minute. How old were you when you got this computer?
Let's see here. I mean, this is probably like fifth grade. This is a 486. I don't remember much. It's probably fifth grade.
Very nice. So while you're messing around with this website, and you got a 486, that's very cool, by the way. And because that was high speed for its time, wasn't it?
Pentium.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Because I got to go back to all right. So the ages that you're talking about, I got to play with the original. I had an original one of those Ataris, where I was really disappointed when Pac-Man really didn't look like Pac-Man. I'm like, all right, so it's kind of sort of like it. It's Indiana Jones. Well, it was interesting, but I died too frequently. In a few short years, we start popping in all these computer games and stuff like that. It's really cool because my influence came from more of the science fiction world. I enjoyed watching reruns of Star Trek and goofy things like Get Smart and things like this that had their weird technology that made you think, what could that future be bringing? And then, going to see and watch the Apollo shots, which was neat. So good stuff.
That's really cool.
The Lost in Time reboot, by the way, is really good on Netflix.
Oh, you mean the Lost in Space?
That's what I meant. Yeah, Lost in Space. There you go.
Yeah, see, I love the original, and I've started watching this one. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that type of stuff, thinking about what it might be like. So cool stuff. So I appreciate you guys sharing those thoughts about that. And we've got so none of you had any problems with trying to change your grades or anything at an early ages, did you?
No, I wasn't that ambitious, unfortunately.
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
Nice. Okay, good. Some suspicion in here. Yes. So right, what I'd like you guys to do is finish this sentence. If I could have the latest, greatest blank, I would spend hours having fun putting it to work and using it.
I'm going to cheat on this one a little bit.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
So I thought about this one for a while. I would want a time machine, and I know that doesn't exist yet.
Oh my goodness.
Well, we think it doesn't exist. It could, but honestly, I don't know which would be more exciting, traveling into the future to see what's coming or traveling back to the past to see what lessons can be learned. I think there's a lot in the past that we could learn from not having so much technology and not having what we have today. I think we've somewhat become lazy because we have everything at our fingertips. And when I look at even my grandparents who lived 60, 70 years ago, it was completely different. I mean, they didn't have everything that we had. And I think there's a lot that can be learned there. I think there's a lot we could learn from Steve. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, Steve's been around the block. Kind of like Jenny from the block.
He's careful, been around. Man. Hey. Thanks. Yes. I appreciate the thought, I think.
leather helmets, all that stuff.
Okay, not that far back. All right, we got the, it is, that's a cool idea because I know a time machine. I can tell you one thing I would want to do is go in the past and tell me, okay, don't do the following. And when they start talking about stock, do buy.
that's Back to the Future right there with the, Biff found the almanac, sports almanac.
Yes. He still ended up in trouble, didn't he?
Yep.
Nice. Great, Scott. Anyway, so Brian, how about you?
As for people being lazy with technology, I think it's an excuse to be lazy. Some people, they allow technology to do all these things for them. And I see lots of mindless scrolling going on, and I'm guilty of it as well. But I think if some people are actually using the technology to do even more things that they couldn't do before, they're being really efficient with their time. So there's both worlds there. So some people are being lazy and they're letting technology do things for them, and some people are using technology to do better, bigger things. But as for my latest, greatest, if I could have something really cool, I just want a Mac, a new MacBook Pro, really, that's newer than Bucky's. I'm just jealous that he has one newer than mine. Mine's like a 2012. And if your listeners are not in the Mac world, it's kind of like a car. Like you look at your friends and go, oh my goodness, they've got a 2015 MacBook Pro. And I want the new 2018 summer edition. You know, that's different than when I had PCs before.
Are you saying that you would not be as jealous in the PC world as you are in the Mac world?
Jealous? No, I'm not really about jealousy. It's just mine like sweats. I mean, like, because I do lots of geeky things. Yes. So this is a mid 2012, and I'll do some HD editing on Final Cut Pro, and I'm like, what's it like to be Bucky right now, who has a nicer MacBook than me?
Okay, I hate to tell you this, Brian, but that is like the definition of jealousy there, all right?
I'm looking up the definition right now.
Nice. You know they're not coming out with one this year. They're skipping this year for the MacBook.
Saying that, but I don't believe you. I'm just going to keep hoping.
Keep waiting.
Keep waiting and hoping and wait. Anyway, well, good stuff. So nice to have something very up to date that I can imagine, especially for all the neat stuff that you do there. And I like that. So you could use Bucky's time machine then to go in the forward and speed them up a little bit. So what you're thinking?
That'd be great. Thanks, Bucky.
Well, so let's shift to the classroom a little bit. How do you guys think that technology can best serve the classroom teacher?
I'll let you take this one first, Brian.
All right. I think relevancy is one of my big pushes lately, and that's you know, for a teacher to walk into a room and go, all right, we're going to learn about social studies, which, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff in history we could learn about, but then not to incorporate any technology or technology that means something to students is it's almost criminal, because that's what students desire, and that's what they need. They need to see how this history, what does it mean to me, and how can I use technology to help me learn about history, like using tech that's they're comfortable with, which is mainly smartphones. They're on smartphones all the time.
I'm just making sure that you're finished.
I'm not real deep, guys. I'm just saying that's all I got.
So for me, from what I've seen with teachers, especially those that are kind of hesitant to use technology, maybe they didn't grow up with it, it's got to benefit the teacher first and foremost. I know the end result, we've got to focus on the kids, but if a teacher's trying to use technology and they're not seeing the benefits for themselves, it's going to be hard to keep moving forward. So for me, things that can save a teacher time, things that can help them manage their classroom better, dive into Google Classroom, use Google's auto grading assessments, set up a Remind 101 to communicate with parents, things like that that really help the teacher communicate, save the teacher time. I think if the teacher sees the benefit, then they're going to be able to take it a step further and start using it with the students. But you got to start there with the teacher.
Yeah, that's good stuff, guys. I know it's funny because I remember when I was in a school system. By the way, we did have electricity then, and and they had a mishmash of computers, and the school system had decided to outfit the entire school with the same computers. I appreciate them doing that, and they when they did that, one of the things that we started you started having a lot of training and stuff like this. Well, they started training us on software that the computers didn't have. And basically they said, when you get a computer that has this, this is the neat stuff you'll be able to do. And I was always impressed by that. It's kind of like, thank you very much. So we just spent 45 minutes learning something that we can't use and probably will never be able to use because we won't get the...
in the past, I've been guilty of that, talking about technology with a group of people and they're like, well, Brian, that sounds awesome, but our school, doesn't have that kind of network capability. We don't have the devices. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about these things right now.
Well, I know that it's one of those things that it, because I think getting back to something that you guys said, which is relevancy and the stuff that's out there, they can start using now, because now you don't have to have some software package that somebody has to upload onto your
That's so much easier now. I mean, you can download a Chrome extension. I mean, there's tons of little apps teachers can use right now.
That's what's so cool. I mean, it's like you have access to all this neat stuff that, and some of it's just, as a classroom teacher, I would imagine, just having somebody say, how about you start here? Or what do you like? And can you start, would you like to start here? That type of thing. Because it's almost like being a kid in a candy shop. Wow, look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't mean to silence the crowd there. Rose.
Crickets.
So what do you think are some of the largest obstacles that teachers face in using technology in the classroom?
Yeah, I think, the big one's time. Or at least the fear of them not being able to, their students perform well on state testing, because of time constraints. And so it's tough, because they're like, we have to teach these standards, and we want to make sure we do well, our students do well on the test. So I don't know if I want to spend as much time, learning this new technology, because I don't know how it's going to affect, how my students perform on a test. And then you also do have genuine issues, tech issues in schools. So some schools are, of course, better than others, but, I just remember, working with teachers, and someone goes, you know what, Brian, I tried that cool thing you showed us in your training, and then my network failed and the kids revolted and there was a coup in the classroom and I almost lost my life because the kids were throwing books at me because the network broke and the Chromebooks broke. And I don't think I'm ever going to do that again. And that's those kind of things. That's the big one. They're like, people just like, I'm not touching technology because it messed up my life.
Yeah, that's a rough one, because that's something that you run into a lot, having been a former high school principal in the days where, you used to have to, people would explain stuff to you like this. They'd go, all right, now, and basically what they're saying is, I know you don't know anything about technology, but as a principal, we're going to explain it to you this way. Our pipeline is not big enough for the amount of information that has to go through it, and therefore everything's hanging up as soon as more people start using it as the day goes on. And you're like, how do we make the pipeline bigger? Because exactly what you're talking about, the teachers would go, well, if I can't use it now, I mean, we ran into that a lot with trying to get them to use some of the Discovery Channel special videos and as well as teacher tube.
You're talking about United Streaming, man. That United Streaming still going on.
Very cool. Didn't know that. But all that type of stuff, if you don't have the ability to have the teachers, have access to it and use it the way it needs to be, I can imagine it very quickly becomes something that they start going, yeah, well, I guess I can't access it, so I'm going to do something different.
Yeah, don't blame them. Don't blame them. You get burned a couple times. You don't want to do it again.
Yeah. So how about it, Bucky?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to lack of exposure. We don't really sit down and think about this a lot, but kids are growing up with technology. I mean, my son's 5. He has no clue that the world existed pre-internet. I mean, he doesn't even know what the internet is. It just exists. And, I was working with one of our staff members a couple of years ago. I won't mention her name, but when she was getting her doctorate, there were no calculators. Like, she did not use a calculator. And that, to me, was mind blowing. It's like people actually did this stuff before we had calculators to put things in. And, So, as a classroom teacher, really any classroom teachers, because technology moves so fast, by the time you get to be a teacher, the tools the students are using are completely different from what you used when you were a student. So I think for all teachers, not just older teachers, even young teachers, lack of exposure to what the students are using right now is a big thing that's an obstacle for them.
Yeah, well, the colleges can't even keep up.
Yeah.
I remember it was just like, even in a master's degree program, I mean, they're teaching us stuff. I'm like, that's 5 years ago.
I took it was an IT degree online, and some of the experiences there were just horrendous because the professors had never taken an online course before. They were just trying to figure this out. And I mean, they are in the information technology business. They get paid to do that. And it was still a struggle most of the time for them.
That's wild to have a technology class that's the professor's staying a chapter ahead. It's like,
right.
That's not good. That's rough, because if they're not taking time to learn some of this stuff, it is sad, because what you're talking about, you know, I had, it's funny because this is really going to be telling about my age, because I graduated in 1981, all right, from high school. Okay. Hey. I am here. All right. And it was funny because one of my teachers was one of my math teachers. He did. He had all these gaming magazines, and you could get. Okay. The good thing is this is a long time ago, right? But you could get extra credit if you came in and spent afternoons plugging in the if then go to statement type thing, right? And just sat there and typed in all that stuff, and I learned a very valuable lesson about save. He didn't teach us that. And so all those hours that first day I spent sitting in there, the next day I had to do it again. But the in which case he realized what he forgot to tell us. And you know, you think about those days when pretty much what was going on was that you had some people who had computers, and you had some colleges and schools who had types of computers and had different speeds. And then, you speed forward to, you know, my group right there rather quickly. When I get into college, I start taking some of these classes and I start upping my knowledge of this information. And you can see that sort of thing. Whereas today, now it's just kind of, oh my gosh, what the kids know. If you're not an adult who stays on top of that stuff, you're going to really be left behind.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's very much so. It's tough. So let's move into this thing, because you guys talk with lots of people, you work with lots of people, you help lots of people, and you started doing some presentations together and helping people with tech tips. So what's one question that you're most frequently asked? Technology question.
Can I vent here for a little bit?
Go right ahead.
I guess I should be careful with what I'm saying.
Keep going, man.
So I guess I have two. One question I hate, and the other question I love to get, but so I'll start with the bad one. Probably the most common question I get is, can you take this PDF file and turn it into a Word document? And that question drives me nuts for multiple reasons. One, because there's no good way to do it. People convert Word documents to PDFs because they don't want you to edit them most of the time.
Right. And my intern's looking over here at me laughing at you.
Yeah. Most of the ones that they ask me, they have a copyright at the bottom. I'm like, just because you're an educator doesn't mean you can take anybody's work and make it your own. But, you know, we do share things a lot, but there are some times where somebody creates something and they want to keep it as their own. So that's my frustrating question. But the other one that I get, maybe more so now, is my phone storage is full. What do I do? And so what takes up the most space on a phone?
Media, photos and videos.
Yep, photos and videos of the grandkids, typically. And so, but the reason I like this question now is because I now have a good answer. Google Photos is amazing. It really has changed how we deal with phones. You can download it on your phone. It uploads all of your photos, backs them up, and then you can clear them off of your phone. And so it frees up space. It's easy. It's easy enough for my grandmother to use it. And so because of that, I give it two thumbs up.
Now, Bucky. That's my litmus test. Your grandmother has DNA that you have, so more than likely she's pretty geeky.
She is.
Well, blanket statement you said about even my grandma can do it, that probably doesn't apply to a lot of grandmas. Am I correct?
I guess even your grandma could do it then.
Okay. All right. I got you. All right, Granny. Granny, if you're watching, if you're listening to this, you can do Google Photos.
So are you saying that if I have trouble, it used to be the joke used to be, being able to make the clock work on a VCR, you had to have the grandkids to do that. So, are you saying that today's technology is a lot simpler than that?
Yes, very much so.
Very good. So what I like is that because I like what you're talking about there. By the way, so it wouldn't be good if I stopped now and said, "Can you help me change this PDF into a?"
If you send me one, I'm sending it back to you and telling you to retype the whole thing.
Thank you.
You got to change the wording so you're not, it's not copyright infringement.
Exactly. Do follow the kids' leads and just change a few of the words, right? Okay.
You got to keep things legal. All right.
Very nice. So, when how about you, Brian? Is there another question that you get asked?
Yeah. You know, mine, I don't have any, you know, hatred towards, you know, the PDF question, you know, like Bucky. I don't really get asked that one a whole lot. I guess Bucky deals with a lot of people who work with a lot of PDFs. But one of my big questions that I get all the time is, are you going to make me feel stupid? Because I work with, you know, mainly teachers, and there's a fear that if they come to a technology training, that they are going to be put in some kind of situation where they're going to feel dumb. And that's kind of like my guiding principle is to not make people feel stupid and to have a freedom about the room where everybody's learning, but not everybody's learning the same thing or at the same pace, but everybody has an opportunity to learn something new.
Very cool. The, you know, it is interesting because I know that a lot of adults, that's one of their big fears. And in the classroom, what's rough about that is that they're surrounded by many kids who might have a lot more information. And I think I think we kind of have to figure out as adults how to be open to our own learning and then also be open to the fact that you're going to have kids that know way more than you do or other adults and just figure out how to put that to work for you.
I think more than that, the kids have more questions than they used to. Even, they may not know more things, but they ask a lot more questions now.
Now that's a good point. I know that, you know, I tended not to ask a lot of questions, and that's, you are right. You get a lot more, can you help me do this? Can you tell me what happens if I.
we're giving students opportunities to ask questions in a less threatening way by online communication. They can do this in Google Classroom or whatever LMS people are using. Same thing goes for parents. Parents are now communicating, you know, via Remind app or Class Dojo, whatever people are using.
So there's one of the things that's really cool is that, I have to ask you this, by the way, before I get to the really cool thing. So have you had anybody ask you how to turn on the computer, how to connect to the internet?
I think most people now that they've been exposed to Wi-Fi, you know, that's when I say most, I mean, I'm talking like 99% of the folks I work with in Northeast Georgia, maybe even 99.9, but I rarely get a, you know, how do I turn the Wi-Fi on? It's usually like, what's the password to the Wi-Fi? And that's just understood.
Yes.
I had a teacher one time ask me, she had two computers in her classroom, both student computers. One was working, the other one wasn't. And I walked in and she asked me to install the internet on the other computer.
Did you?
Not joking. I installed it for her. I set it up.
Nice. Thank you. That was very nice of you. Very kind.
Install the internet, Bucky.
I thought you guys created it.
Yeah, what's president? Yeah, I don't know.
Moving right along.
Yeah, so, politics.
Let's move on. So good stuff. So what I want to do now is let's spend some time talking some tech tips. All right, is that okay?
Let's do it.
All right. So let's start. Who wants to go first? Give us a good tech tip for people to take away today.
All right, I'll start with one, and we'll just kind of go back and forth. Is that okay, Bucky?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Just don't take it.
So, you know, let's say, you know, not everybody wakes up on the right side of the bed. You got a bad day. Something happened. You ate Chinese buffet and it just didn't treat you right. And you come into work and you're just kind of cranky and you send an email that you should not have sent. You didn't really think it through, or you didn't have the right punctuation. You made an exclamation when it should have been like just a period, because you know that exclamation can make people feel kind of threatened. And so you hit send and you realize that you've done something very bad. But fortunately for many of the people up here in Northeast Georgia, they're using Gmail and they can turn on an undo send feature in the settings. And I like to have that, not for the I'm angry or I wake up on the wrong side of the bed reason, but just because a lot of times when I hit send, for some reason, my brain, right when I hit send, my brain goes, oh, Brian, you forgot that attachment. You forgot that thing. You forgot to say that. And so I just hit undo send and all is well.
Nice. I got to tell you, that's one of my favorite things with Gmail, because invariably I'm sending a follow-up email that says, oh, and by the way, here's the attachment. So knowing that I have that power is very nice to be able to go.
It is awesome.
Undo and here we go, resend with the attachment.
I think like a 30-second, that's the limit, 30-second undo send.
That's perfect, though.
All right, so I'll stay on that same theme with email. I'm not a morning person. Those that know me know that. I don't like to wake up early. If I do wake up early, I can't function. So if you get an email from me before 7:30 in the morning, it's probably not me typing the email. So what I'll do, I use a tool called Boomerang. It works with Gmail and Outlook. And what this tool does, you can type up an email. Let's say I was working late last night, Monday night, typing up an email to a group, but I don't want this group to get the email at 8 o'clock on a Monday night, right? Because one, they're probably not going to respond right then. When they get back in the next day, it's going to be under a bunch of other email. I'm not going to get a response from them. So what I'll do is I'll use Boomerang to schedule the email to go out at a specified time. And my go-to time is 7:47 a.m. If you get an email from me at 7:47 a.m., you got boomeranged. But that does two things. One, they're more likely to reply. If they just get an email and they get into the office, it's sitting right there at the top of their inbox. And two, it makes me look like I work early in the morning. So, I mean, it's a win-win for everybody.
Boomerang by Bucky.
Nice.
That's good. I'm going to write that down. I got to do something with that. That's good.
So now I'm going to be disappointed when I find out that actually you were not sending that at 7 a.m.
That's true.
It might be a t-shirt.
Have a t-shirt in that, you say?
Yeah, Boomerang by Bucky.
I like that. There's something in that. I think there is. So Brian, what's your next one?
Well, of course, you know, Bucky stole my Google Photos. So I don't want to. Yeah. I mean, he's like, I think he knew I was writing notes somewhere. Since he's into sci-fi and things, he went to the future and he found out.
I would have bet money I could guess which one you're talking about, and it sounds like I was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I know what I'm talking about, my next one.
Okay.
I'll throw in some Fiverr love for all the listeners out there, all Steve's listeners. So Fiverr.com, that's Fiverr.com, is a marketplace where creatives across the world do things for as low as $5. And, you know, in my world, I try my best to engage people. I found out that if I don't engage people or hook people right at the beginning of a lesson or right when I see folks, there's a tendency for them not to ever listen to me for the whole workshop or training. So I like to find creative ways, find people to make creative things for me. So for instance, and folks who are listeners who know me, have probably heard my Morgan Freeman voiceovers.
Yes.
So there's people out there who do voiceovers, Gandalf, Morgan Freeman. I hired like a Arnold Schwarzenegger voiceover one time. I've had people make logos for me. I even hired an actor to be a, what is it? I hired someone to be super creepy.
And I've seen that one. It's creepy.
I paid someone $5 to be creepy and to creep on someone, a friend of mine. I was just playing a trick on. So, but yeah, just tons of people. Yeah, go check it out. Tons of things they do. People do music videos. I like to think of a teacher who just wants a lyric video. So if a teacher makes like a song, then people on Fiverr can actually put it to music and make a little thing out of it. And it might cost that teacher, you know, $25 or $50. Could cost less than that. But if you think about time and how valuable time is, if you want to go spend time with your kids, you know, do you want to spend $5 and let somebody else do it? Or do you want to spend 4 hours on your computer making this thing?
Oh, I like that. Good stuff. That's I must say that you have creative ways of using Fiverr. I had always thought of Fiverr as a place that you go to for stuff to be drawn, animated, logos and stuff like this. And you open up a whole new world when we have the we go from the logos to the creep factor. I thought that was interesting. So
logos to creepy.
I don't think creepy does it justice.
Yeah, that was messed up, but I got to tell you the impersonations were awesome too. It's, when you first listen to Morgan Freeman, you're like, is that Morgan Freeman? Does he know Morgan Freeman?
Steve's like, they have a bigger budget at their reset than ours.
You got that right. Yes, I realized right then I need to start complaining. This is like, hey, where'd you guys get all that money from?
That's right. And Morgan Freeman's not charging $5.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna throw in another one. If you don't have a password vault or a password manager, like LastPass or 1Password, to me that's a must. It's like with Google Photos, it's a no-brainer. It solves a problem that everybody has. I mean, think about how many online accounts that you have where email and password, or even worse than that, username and password. I can't remember what I picked for my username. I use LastPass. I just use the free version. And I always get the blowback about, well, if I put all my passwords in one place, isn't that a bad security practice? And I'm like, well, you probably have a Word file on your desktop where you keep all of your passwords anyway. Either that, or you use the same password for every site. And so, but you know, for me, I don't really use it because I'm concerned about security. My big reason for using it is the convenience factor of not having to remember all of these different passwords. I mean, you think about some of these sites that you use like once a year. You know, I file my taxes once a year. I have no idea what I picked for my password a year ago. And rather than having to go through that forgot password process, and then some sites don't even have the forgot password. You have to actually email a human being and interact with them and get them to reset your password. And to me, it's a waste of time for everybody. So Password Vault, I recommend either LastPass or 1Password. It's just no brainer.
Excellent stuff there. That's, you know, I can tell you that one of the things that drives me nuts with passwords is that anytime I convince myself that I'll remember it, that was stupid.
<You know? laughs> Now, Bucky, what happens if you forget the 1Password?
They have a forgot password process. It's not as easy as the other ones. Obviously, it's a little bit more secure, but
it doesn't involve DNA. I mean, you're
You have to
They send you a scrape kit,
some blood tests, skin samples.
Excellent. Oh, good stuff there. So before we move on, any other tech tips?
I got an abstract one. This isn't an app or a tool. For me, pick something and try it. Like, so many teachers and I mean, adults in general are afraid to try something because they're afraid it might not work. With technology, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work and you move on. You haven't broken anything. You haven't, in most cases, you haven't even spent any money. You know, give it a shot. If it doesn't work, move on. But it could be something that's life-changing. And so I think you gotta try.
I agree, Bucky.
Yeah, that's great advice, because that is something that I think, if nothing else, that's what most stuff is, user-friendly to the point that you can find help for it as well. And the best thing is just sit there and try and mess with it. Good advice. Good stuff.
If only there were a website that had instructional videos on every topic in the world.
Yeah,
that would be so helpful.
I'm going to make one.
You should.
Going to make one?
BuffTube.
Nice. I got to say this, because you're actually kind of jumping ahead there just a little bit. So what I'd like to do is let's actually pop into that world for just a second, because that is something, because it really connects well here. Let's talk for a minute about, could it be that it already exists, YouTube? I hate to disappoint you guys, but it's been created. And so what do you think about teachers learning to incorporate it with what they do in their classes? Because that's a place that, you know, one of the things I love is that I go there automatically now. Matter of fact, I drive my own kids nuts. They'll say, Dad, if you say one more time that you're going to YouTube to go find out how to do something, but that's what I find out. I mean, I've learned how to change the gas lines in my weed whacker, and I've learned how to change the cabin air filter in my car and the backup light, and as well as tech stuff. I've learned how to create all kinds of different things there. What do you think about using YouTube?
Well, I just want to say the word weed whacker too. So I'm going to say weed whacker. And then
thanks.
I haven't said that in a long time. And and I'm just going to say, Bucky used the term no brainer. I'm going to steal his little phrase there. All right. So college today, you know, like I said, universities, for some reason, I mean, this is like supposed to be like the guiding light of education, you know, it's supposed to help people you know, be as relevant as possible as they go into the workforce. I think every college who's putting out teachers, or probably pretty much anybody, they should have a class called like YouTube 101. Like how do you use YouTube? How do you incorporate in a classroom? And then this is kind of bold here, but I think everybody should be making their own YouTube content. When I work with students, because every once in a while I get to work with students, I say, what do y'all want to do when you grow up? They're like, I want to be a YouTuber.
Nice.
I'm like, oh man. I was like, that sounds like an awesome job, but you're going to, this is funny. I got my webcam on, and my intern Clay just stretched out and his arms came out in the feed here. It was kind of weird. Like arms were sticking out of nowhere.
Nice. I want to point out to everybody that you know how earlier Brian was talking about how he wished that he had the latest greatest Mac Pro like Bucky has. Well, hey Bucky, do you have an intern? Because I don't have an intern. I think I need an intern.
Yeah, I really could use. I could use a couple interns, but I mean, one would be nice.
Wow, man. Hello.
Hey, Clay said he could do some stuff for y'all. Just let him know.
Nice. Appreciate that. So cool stuff. So what do you think, Bucky, about the YouTube?
I'm going to rant again for a second. I'm sorry. I meet with so many school districts that block YouTube either completely or they block a majority of the videos on YouTube. You know, if you're a teacher, go back to your school and say, Bucky and Buff told you you cannot block YouTube. Here's my deal on it. There's a lot of junk on YouTube, but the amount of value that's on YouTube or any video site, so much outweighs the junk that's on there. I get that we're trying to protect our kids and you need to think about age ranges and things like that. But, you know, if you're blocking YouTube for a high school, those kids are about to go off to college to a free reign Wild West internet. And if they're used to just being, you know, constrained to this one corner of the internet, Brian and I did a cyber safety training a long time ago.
Long.
Where we used to teach teachers about, you know, the dark sides and the dark corners of the internet. And you don't want your kids finding that out after they've left the nest. Like, you need to teach them to be good digital citizens. And, you know, blocking YouTube is not the answer. So it's just such a valuable resource. You've got to teach kids how to use these things properly. It's like not handing a kid a hammer until they get old enough to whack somebody in the head with it and not teach them how to use it. It's just YouTube is a tool that can be used properly or misused. Yeah. So
schools have protocol. I mean, schools can, you know, they have some pretty neat protocol for, you can have YouTube on and then there's certain levels of filtering for YouTube and that the teachers can just hit a button and say, I validate that this is a good video, bam. And then, you know, if there's some questionable videos, teachers can validate that it's a fine video.
That's good stuff, because that is unfortunate. And I agree with you about, you know, they do need to learn that it's important to teach the kids how to use things wisely. And because if they're not using these tools in school, you know, they're using them outside and you could put them to good work inside school. So,
yeah. And management, you know, and management's a hard part. You know, teachers are worried about, you know, what are the kids looking at when they're on YouTube? Unfortunately, you know, the days like I grew up in, just kind of where the teachers were just kind of sitting at the desk and they had like their big coffee and they were like reading a book and they were saying, you read the book, you do the questions at the end of the chapter. You know, those days are gone. And the teacher has to be more mobile and have to be aware of what's going on in the classroom. And they do make software so teachers can kind of see what's going on people's screens, but really it's just being aware of what's going on in the class.
That's very good stuff, and I appreciate y'all talking about that. We've got, you know, it's because so much of, you know, I guess what hinders adults is that we worry that something bad is going to happen, because invariably something bad happens somewhere, and the only reason why we know about it is thanks to the internet also. and so you start worrying about that, and so you know, I think part of the attempts, although well-meaning, which they're just misguided, which is to just block everything, and unfortunately that then means that your students and teachers are not using these tools together for good purposes to see how they can be used besides downloading music or whatever. So good stuff.
Napster, thank goodness.
Yes. So, hey, now you're dating you, all right? So let's talk about this. What is your favorite tech tool or app, and why? Who wants to go first?
I want to see if I won the bet here. Go for it, Brian.
I bet you won the bet, Bucky.
Yes.
So I do tons of screencasting, and so I've used many different types of screencasting software in the past, but I really like Screencastify. And it's a Chrome extension, and it's free, and it allows me to make tutorials. Like, I made one for Steve. Steve wanted to make a GIF animation on the bottom of his email signature, or in his email signature. So I made him a little tutorial, because what I do is I have to work with many people across Northeast Georgia and beyond. And I just found out the quickest way, and it's not just about me being lazy, it's about just me being efficient, and people actually want to see how to do the thing step by step. I mean, I could write them an email and give them step by step, or I can show them how to do the thing step by step. They always want to see how to do the thing.
I love that.
Right. We're going to have to talk about that. You said GIF. You just made half the people listening to this podcast angry. Steve, is it GIF or GIF?
You know, if I say what I'm going to say, is it going to mean that I no longer get to be included in the club? Because I like to call it GIF.
All right, so there's one for one. Clay, is it GIF or JIF?
It's definitely GIF.
Yes!
Brian, you're at number 3-1, buddy. Oh my gosh, what was the question? Oh, favorite tech tool.
Favorite tech tool or app, yes.
So for me, again, time-saving things that free up my time. As a teacher or principal, you need your time. You don't want to be spending your time doing monotonous things. So for me, Cam Scanner. It's an app on your phone. It turns your phone into a scanner. You can scan receipts. You can scan, travel statements, anything that when you're out on the road, you need to scan something and get it to somebody. Scan it, send it, and throw the paper away. Because
that's,
if I don't.
That's awesome, like scanning. I'm just saying. Yeah. Scanning is so dope. It's awesome.
Just don't be one of those people that scan it and then print it out to sign it and then scan it again and then print that out. And my goodness.
Are you saying there's a problem with that? I'm not saying I do that. That's not my point. Very cool. So awesome. So we have Screencastify, and Bucky, can you say the name of the app that that you used?
Cam Scanner.
Cam Scanner. Awesome.
Yep. Yeah, both have free versions. Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent. So do you guys have something tech related that is new to you? And if so, what is it? And how do you help yourself learn how to use it?
Hey guys, I got something new. I just got this in the mail last week. I'm helping some schools do virtual reality labs. So they're going on field trips using headsets and VR apps. But I want to help students make their own VR content. So I'm just kind of piloting a 360 camera. This is made by Ricoh. It's got a Ricoh Theta SC360 camera, and it's like, I think it was like $160. What it does is it's a one-click operation. You touch a button, and it takes a 360 sphere photo, and it patches them together in a matter of seconds.
It's so pink.
It's salmon, okay? I want to make sure people know it's mine. Or Pinaresis. Sorry, that's what I meant.
It's too late.
My employer.
He also has a pink jacket, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, I'm not scared of pink.
I know you're not.
Man, dongles are everywhere. I mean, I got dongles.
Okay. All right.
Dongles dangling all out of my bag. For me, I guess tech related.
So if you've got dongle issues, you need some kind of dongle organizer.
I have a dongle organizer.
They make those. Okay. Yeah. What's the brand of dongle organizing? Do you have?
It's got the little rubber straps on the inside.
Let me see how much dongle. Keep going.
So for me, I got a little quadcopter for Christmas about 2 years ago, a drone. And since then, I've been pretty into drones. My dad and I like to build some drones. So we built a drone about a year ago now. And so I'd gotten it put together. But I hadn't screwed everything in yet. I wanted to make sure it would fly before I tightened everything down. So we took it outside, and my neighbor was out there. And so, just for all the ladies listening, when a guy is about to fly something and there's another guy watching, you have to try to impress the other guy. So, you know, I turned it on. I just want to make sure it flew. Got it off the ground a little bit. I'm like, okay, good. But then I thought, you know, I got to fly this thing around a little bit. So I got it up about 30 feet in the air, took off straight forward, and forgot that I hadn't programmed the turning yet. I couldn't turn it. I could just go forward and backward. And so
nice.
When I went to turn it, it didn't turn, and it just ran straight into the side of my neighbor's house, broke in half, flipped upside down on his house. The receiver that lets me control it from my controller flew out of the drone, disconnected, and it is full throttle upside down on top of his roof.
Excellent.
And so I had to get the ladder and do the climb of shame up to on top of his house. The sad thing is that wasn't the first drone that we had crashed into his house. So
now, who are you trying to impress again?
It's just a neighbor.
It
was a bad idea.
Yes. It sounds like to me like you've a little upset at his house. So
yeah. Yeah. You know, I talked about failure earlier. Make sure that when you fail, it's affordable to fail when you fail.
Yeah, start with like a $30 drone.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice.
It was a bad day.
So very cool. So we got the 360 camera and we got the is it a dongle organizer or is it that you're working on the...
I think you just threw that in for extra. Like,
I guess.
You guys got to say weed whacker. I just wanted to say dongle.
Thanks.
Some people don't understand, you know, how to organize their dongles.
It's important. Like, it's a life skill. It's a soft skill.
Like I just keep mine in a front pocket on my man bag, and they're just all in one little spot. It's hard to find the right ones.
I do have to say that does require then, you know, you do have to get used to carrying like a backpack, a man bag, something like that. If you're to carry all that stuff, because you got to also have batteries. So,
well, that's of course, you know, a Mac thing too. You got to have like 5,000 accessories.
Yes, most definitely. So guys, I greatly appreciate this talk today. This is awesome. And this is a lot of fun.
It's been fun, man.
And it's has been fun. I've enjoyed this. And if a listener would like to reach out to either of you, what would be the best way? And do you have any social media that you would like the listeners to check out? And by the way, for the listeners, remember that I'll put all this information they're going to tell you into my show notes. So it makes it easy to go find the links and go straight there. So who wants to go first?
All right. They can reach my, they can reach my, they can get me at Brian Buffington, Twitter, and also Pioneer Risa Tech. And I also do some consulting beyond the region, and it's at briankbuffington.com.
And then for me, just at Bucky Bush on Twitter, and I still have an email account, buckybush@gmail.com, if you are still one of those people that use email.
Yeah. Boomerang Bucky.
Yeah, boomerang me up.
Nice. So with that being said, I have just a couple of more questions, and one of them goes like this. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
I would tell them to be interesting. You know, I have a fifth grade son, and when he gets home from school, he talks about his day. I say, hey, you know, how's your day? And of course, when they get older, I hear that they don't tell. They just say, Dad was good. He'll actually tell me about his day, and always talks about one teacher. And the reason he likes this teacher is because, hey, we have a guest here.
I was wondering.
Teaching.
Just...
I'm doing a podcast.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. They have a recording sign on the door.
Ask her GIF or JIF, see if you can get somebody.
Yes,
in your
exactly. Does she say GIF or JIF? But...
yeah, I should get her to do that. But my son comes home, he talks about this specific teacher, and he doesn't necessarily talk about the curriculum. I don't know, that kind of sounds kind of bad maybe from an educator. And he's not talking about what they learned or the greatest strategy. He doesn't talk about screencasting. He just talks about how he really likes this teacher because she has like a, she has a, maybe like a nickname for him, or she tells him funny stories in class, and she talks about her other career she had, and she's just an interesting person. And so I think that as teachers, as we try to compete with more, and now we're going to get super geeky like Bucky's realm here, as we start competing more with automated technology and artificial intelligence and robots teaching kids and all this crazy stuff that will happen more, that in order to separate us from those things, not only do we have to know content, know pedagogy, and I just want to say pedagogy in a podcast. And
very nice, thing. Yes.
That we have to be interesting. Like we have to have something that kids actually want to, they want to learn from. They're like, this person isn't a robot. Because if we keep asking teachers just do robotic type things, everybody's doing the same thing, then we have no, we can't compete with robots. We can't compete with artificial intelligence. So I think for any new teachers, just being authentic and being interesting, trying new things, taking chances, and failing as much as possible.
And for me, I would say, don't forget why you got started. I mean, nobody goes into teaching for money. Nobody goes into teaching. You're going to teaching because you love kids and you want to teach kids. You want to help them learn. And you're shaping the future of the landscape by teaching those kids. And so, like Brian said, we get so bogged down with testing and scores and course grades and all of these accountability measures that, you know, when it comes down to it, the relationships with the students are the only thing that matters. And, you know, that's what matters to your kids. Your kids don't care about course grades. Most kids care about course grades because they don't want a spanking when they get home. I mean, your kids want to be respected and they want to be communicated with. And just don't forget that as you dive into everything that is education.
Excellent. Excellent.
So I got switchins in South Georgia.
Get switches.
Did you have to go pick your own switch off the oak tree in the back, the hickory tree?
A hickory tree. Yeah, I was actually, and my grandma, she would just take me one hand, and we do like this little ring around her. I just kind of like circle her. She had me by one hand. She just, I'd dance around her. She just keep hitting me.
I've done that dance before.
But it wasn't about grades. It was about, you know, it's like hitting my sister.
Stop doing that. Nice.
Yeah, I stopped, you know, for like 5 minutes.
Excellent, excellent. Timing's everything. So I got to ask then. So do you say pecan or pecan or pecan?
I'm pecan. Yeah.
Okay. I just had to ask that. It's GIF or GIF.
Bucky doesn't want to say. That's fine.
I don't know. Honestly, I mean.
What do you mean? It's just whoever you are. You don't ever say. You never talk about that delicious nut.
I do, but I'm not sure how I would say it. I think I switch back and forth.
Okay. Well, I'm not ashamed of where I'm from. It's pecan. I mean.
Thank you. So. What advice would you guys give principals and superintendents about helping their teachers tap into the many uses of tech in the classroom?
Good luck.
Yeah. So for me, I think it's important for them to model effective use. If you have a principal that is drilling you about using technology and they don't use technology, you're not going to get the support of your teachers unless you model how to use it. And if you model it effectively and you do it right, you don't even have to tell them to use it. They're going to pick up on it and run with it because they see the effects and the benefits. You need them to be on the receiving end where the student is so they can see the benefits and the uses of it. I see so many principals that they are always talking about how teachers need to be using technology in their classrooms, and the principal doesn't even remember the password to log into his computer in his office. It's
ouch.
That's bad.
Yeah, so you're speaking truth, man. Speaking truth, yeah. I'll give you a couple examples like of what Bucky just said. And, you know, I had a superintendent recently pull me aside and said, "Brian, show me that screencasting thing." And I'm like, "Well, dude, you want to know screencasting? I'm the guy." And so I show him how to do screencasting, and he makes one for all of his admins. So they're talking about maybe the budget coming up, and he's explaining things, and he gets to show him this visual narrated type of media called a screencast. And of course, all his principals, then he said, "Brian, why don't you come show my principals how to do it?" Well, they're more enticed to do it now because their boss is doing it.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely thing. But you know, the advice I would give principals and admins would be just to give teachers the freedom to be innovative and the freedom to try new things. I know some principals like this, and actually they desire it. And it's almost a culture. You know what I mean? Like if you've ever been to school and they have a culture of we just don't sit around doing the same thing over and over again.
Right.
We keep trying new things and we're not scared of doing new things. But the teachers will only do that if they feel they have the freedom to do so, and they won't get chastised or, you know, get voted a number one on their evaluation for something. You know, they have to have some buy-in from the administrative folks. And then I would also tell them to let their, you know, if they have some people who exhibit, and of course I'm thinking, like, I want every teacher to be as geeky as me and want to be innovative and try new things. I know that that's not the world we live in right now. Not everybody is like me or going to want to do those things, but schools have people who are kind of on the edge and are thinking about trying new stuff and they're not scared. I really advise those principals to let those teachers go to, like, the Georgia Educational Technology Conference in Atlanta. That's a little plug there. I'm not getting paid any money for that. That's in November. And that's just a great opportunity for those teachers to say, here's a bunch of teachers who do not give up, and they don't mind failing, and they like to try new things in the classroom.
Excellent. Thank you both very much. And so here's the last question that I have. Do either of you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be, and what would you say?
You know, I had a lot of math teachers that I really liked, but I liked math, so that wasn't very hard for them. In 11th grade in high school, I had a literature teacher, was probably my favorite teacher, least favorite subject. I did not like to read. I did not like to write. You know, with math, it's black and white. There's a right answer. There's a wrong answer. When it comes to writing a paper, it's almost like you have to impress the teacher. To me, all of that subjective stuff just, ugh. And so I didn't like it. I got a C in 9th grade lit. It was the first C I'd ever gotten. And so I get here to 11th grade lit, just almost giving up before I even got started. And this teacher basically told me, I know you can do this. Like, you can do this if you try, and I want you to try. And so, I mean, she respected me, and she basically told me she knew that I could do it. And her confidence in me is what really made the difference. And I think teachers so often write kids off before the kid even has a chance. You know, you got to get to know the kid. You got to build that relationship with them. And I mean, that has nothing to do with technology. It, like I said, it goes back to relationships. Everything is about the relationships with the students. So,
you know, and it's funny you talk about 9th grade lit, man. That's mine. 9th grade lit. And, you know, my situation is kind of similar. I don't, you know, to this day, I mean, I like to read, but I like to read things when I'm learning. I don't read necessarily for fun. I like to learn things. But, you know, in 9th grade, well, at least the end of 8th grade, they make you read books over the summer. I don't know if they still do this. It was like the most horrific thing I've ever had to do.
They give you pizza now for reading.
Yeah. No, that was a wonderful thing, Book It Club. But they gave me these books. One was like Animal. I just did like a rap song there. Animal Farm. The other one was like Lord of the Flies, and maybe one other. And of course, to me, now we look at it and go, these books are really small. But back then they were like, man, I don't want to read this. This is the most awful thing ever. And so I had this 9th grade lit teacher. We had to read it. And of course, I didn't read it. I did the Cliff Notes on Animal Farm. You know, that, you know, you're, that's a sad day.
Especially because it's a very short book.
There's only like 50 pages of that book. I don't know. And so I did that. And so I meet the guy, I meet the teacher, and of course I still didn't care nothing about reading, but he was interesting. He was a very interesting guy, and his name was Mr. Tony. And this made me think about, I tried to look him up on Facebook, and I think someone maybe hacked his account or made a fake account or something for him, because he has a picture, but he has friends, but he doesn't have any post on his Facebook. That's another tech thing later, but he was interesting, and he made fun of me. Now, this sounds crazy, okay? But he made fun of me, and I thought he gave me attention. He gave me attention, and I'm an entertainer. I like that kind of thing. I like having attention from people. But one of the other things about him is he had a rear view mirror on his computer. His computer was in the corner near the front of the classroom, but it wasn't like, it was where you could see his back. Like, he had, like, most teachers don't do this, but his back was turned to the classroom. So he had a rear view mirror so he could see what was going on while he was working on his
awesome
stuff.
Awesome. Took me a second to realize what you were talking about.
And it was, and he was just fun. He was a fun character. And like I said, just being interesting is cool. And so by him being interesting, I joined the yearbook staff, in which I got to learn some basic editing and Photoshop. And then also some entrepreneurship type things, in which I did, we had to, you know, sell ads in the yearbook. And of course, I'm really big into small business and things now. So you never know, man, you never know what a teacher means to somebody. And even if they don't, you don't care much about the subject matter, it's not always about the subject matter. It's just about relationships, and it's about being interesting and kind.
Excellent. Thank you both so very much. You know, this has been fun. You know, Brian and Bucky, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. You guys are awesome. Keep up the great work. And thank you so much for talking tech with me.
Hey, I'd like to leave your listeners with a challenge before we sign off.
Very cool.
So Buff and I would like to challenge all of your listeners to do something you know you're going to fail at, fail, and then figure out what you learned from the situation. And when you do that, send us a tweet. Let us know what you did.
Awesome. And so you want to remind...
There's some pimple in the microwave, guys. Love you.
So I was going to ask you if you're going to remind them where to tweet you at.
Brian Buffington.
At Bucky Bush on the Twitter.
Excellent. And those will be linked on my show notes as well. So good stuff. I love the challenge. It's awesome talking to you guys. Best at all you
Steve.
Do. Keep it up.
It was awesome, man. Appreciate you.
See ya.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.